Well, the dirty deed has been done. House Democrats rushed headlong over a political cliff and voted to impeach President Donald J. Trump. They had been trying to impeach this man from the moment he was elected. And in fact, they had begun hatching plans to overturn the people's choice for president in 2016's election, even before the election results were known. To pretend that they impeached him because of a phone call that happened between Trump and the new president of Ukraine shows the rank hypocrisy of Democrats. That phone call happened long after Democrats had decided to try and impeach this president. They became angry that Hillary Clinton had lost that election to Trump, and there was good reason for their anger. Not that Trump had done anything illegal, or that he had colluded with Russia to steal the election. The Mueller report proved that was a lie. Their anger stemmed from the fact that Trump's victory threatened to disclose the honesty or dishonesty of Barack Hussein Obama and his vice president, Joe Biden, and Hillary Clinton and the Democrat National Committee, as well as the corruption that had occurred in the 8 years of the Obama administration. I'm sure there are some good conservative Democrats. In fact, I know a few of them. But the party itself has been hijacked by delusional partisans like Pelosi, Schiff, Schumer, Waters, Nadler, and others who have been in Congress far too long. They are evil, corrupt people with no concern for the Constitution. House Speaker Pelosi realized that their haste to impeach Trump had produced no evidence of a crime and nothing Trump had done to rise even remotely close to impeachment. She knew that the case the House had built was weaker than diluted wine and that there was no way the Senate would uphold impeachment. So she made threats not to send the House impeachment articles over to the Senate until she had been assured that the Senate would conduct a fair trial. Fair in her mind. That's something that Pelosi's House did not do, and her arrogance is appalling. A quid pro quo is when you demand something from someone in return for something the other side wants. Pelosi is clearly guilty. Democrats are banking on the hope that Republicans of the future will not be as vindictive and partisan against a Democrat president, and they're probably right. While that is the nature of today's Democrats, the Republicans have shown no signs of it. Still, they have made a mockery of the impeachment process, and all future presidents, Republican or Democrat, have to be concerned that a rogue element in the House can vote to impeach them with no facts, just vicious hate. So let's take a closer look today at the Democrats behind this movement to impeach the president. There's not enough time to mention all of these evil people, and so I'll concentrate on four: Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff, Jerry Nadler, and Maxine Waters. You won't hear this from the fake news mainstream media because they themselves are also behind this abuse of process. There is so much that the American people do not know about the Democrats who led the fight to impeach President Trump. My research of these evil Democrats credits the following for their input: the Millennial Report, the Daily Coin, Freedom Outpost, and the Horn News. Let's begin today with Nancy Pelosi. How she earned her fortune may surprise you. The average American, you and me, would be prosecuted for the same things that Pelosi did to get rich. Make no mistake, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is rich, filthy rich. She and her husband have accumulated a ton of wealth, but they have not been so eager, like many Democrats, to part with it and put their money where their mouths are concerning giving to others to take care of needs. Yet she is among the first to misquote Scripture. She even claimed that she didn't hate Donald Trump because, as a Catholic, she couldn't hate. That was an odd statement, since she has spent 3 years trying to politically assassinate the man and destroy his family in the process. Pelosi claims to be a faithful Catholic while being in the forefront of abortion. The Catholic Church abhors the slaughter of babies in their mothers' wombs, and Pelosi cannot be a loyal Catholic, given her hate for those unwanted children. A recent report demonstrated that Pelosi has not only gained her fortune through legitimate means, although a thorough investigation might call that into question, but even some by illegitimate means. According to the House Press Gallery, House speakers earn an annual salary of $223,500, which amounts to a roughly $30,000 raise for Pelosi, who is now, again, the third highest paid elective representative in the federal government. Still, she's way under the wealth that Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren deems worthy of a major tax increase. Pelosi's own financial disclosures indicate that she and her husband Paul own both a palatial home surrounded by a wall for security and a vineyard in California with a combined worth of at least $5 million. She also owns stock in Disney, Facebook, and Apple. No surprise there. However, a large percentage of Pelosi's money comes from Financial Leasing Services Incorporated. In all, Pelosi's investments of her vineyard, stock, salary, and property add up to an incredible income and makes her net worth at least $100 million. Back in 2011, Steve Croft of 60 Minutes exposed that Pelosi had bought initial public offerings, or IPOs, that earned hefty returns while she had access to insider information that would have been illegal for an average citizen to trade with. Undisturbed by that conflict of interest, the Pelosis purchased 5,000 shares of Visa at an initial price of $44 a share. 2 days later, it was trading at $64 a share. Credit card legislation that would have been detrimental to Visa never made it to the House floor for a vote. Pelosi killed it. The Hoover Institution's Peter Schweitzer stressed that what Pelosi did at that time was completely legal. He told 60 Minutes that there are all sorts of forms of honest grafts that congresspersons engage in that allow them to become very, very wealthy. So it was not illegal, but highly unethical. He said, "I think it is highly offensive and wrong. Congress had long ago made it possible to cheat, but only for themselves. Insider trading on the stock market, if you were a member of Congress, those rules did not apply to you. Let's say that you sat on a health care committee, and then you know that Medicare, for example, is considering not reimbursing for a certain drug. That's vital market-moving information. And if you could trade stock off of that insider information legally, that's a great profit-making opportunity." And that sort of devious behavior went on for decades before the American people were made aware of it and demanded a change. By then, Pelosi had amassed a fortune. It's troubling that a criminal, corrupt woman would use her position as Speaker of the House to make a ton of money when the average American would be jailed for doing the same thing. Pelosi's own daughter summed up why we should be concerned about her deviousness. Her daughter said that Pelosi would cut your head off before you even knew you were bleeding. This evil woman relies on focus groups, and a wet finger in the wind to show her which way to go with legislation. There is no soul in Nancy Pelosi, just a desperate quest for power and the money that comes from that power. In fairness, I'll point out that it wasn't just Pelosi or Democrats that tolerated insider trading in Congress. Republicans did not sound the alarm either, nor try to stop this abuse of power. There is enough guilt to go around. History shows us that political candidates spend millions of dollars of donated money to get elected to a job paying less than $200,000 a year. Why? Because they could use the power of that office to become enormously wealthy. And that brings me to another dishonest Democrat who secretly made her family filthy rich. Maxine Waters loves to accuse Donald Trump of using illegal campaign tricks to become president. For decades, Waters has skirted or outright broke federal laws while her family was making millions of dollars off that shady arrangement. The short version is Maxine Waters' endorsement is for sale, if the price is right. Waters mails her followers an official sample ballot at election time with her picture and a list of candidates they should vote for. But those candidates have to pay for their place on the endorsement slate. Waters admitted to the Federal Election Commission in 2004 that federal candidates who do not pay a proportionate share of the expenses of her mailer were not included in the ballot. In other words, pay up or else. That sounds a lot like the definition of a quid pro quo, a definition that Democrats will pay a steep price for opening that can of worms. Waters runs a classic shakedown, experts say. Tom Anderson, a director of the National Legal and Policy Center, or NLPC, said that Pelosi comes knocking on other politicians in California to say, "Do you want my endorsement?" Because she knows they don't want her opposing them. So Waters makes them an offer they cannot refuse. You either pay her or she'll tell her low-information followers that you support Trump. Waters represents a poor district whose voters are vastly conned by promises of free stuff. She speaks, and they jump. Waters doesn't even live among the poor in her district, opting instead to live in a palatial walled mansion in an exclusive community of majority white people. While the color of one's skin should not matter, the color of Maxine Waters' skin has been used as a sledgehammer. Don't follow her completely, and you're a bigot, a racist, or both. The biased media loves to give Waters a prime-time platform to spout her hate. Lots of California Democrats have greased her palms over the years, including California's Governor Gavin Newsom, as well as Senator Barbara Boxer and Senator Kamala Harris. They all paid for Maxine's endorsement mailer. The money Maxine Waters has made this way for over a decade gets collected by Waters' family. And that money has made Waters' family rich, stinking rich. Until 2004, when Waters' hand was called by election officials, those slate mailers were run by a group called LA Vote, which made $1.7 million off of that operation. And Waters' daughter, Karen Waters, collected $450,000 of that payday. Maxine Waters' son, Edward, pocketed another $115,000. Karen Waters has raked in $800,000 since 2004 and is expecting another major haul this year. She collected $108,000 by selling her mother's endorsement in the last election, and the Democrats owed her another $183,022. That means that Maxine Waters' daughter made $291,022 in 2018 alone. That puts her in the top 10% of income earners that Maxine likes to rail against. There seems to be a pattern in the Democrat Party, as we have seen with Joe and Hunter Biden. Also, Nancy Pelosi and John Kerry's relatives are being paid by oil and gas companies in Ukraine. Not to be outdone, Mitt Romney, a never-was Republican, has a relative involved there and getting paid. Senator Kamala Harris bought Waters' endorsement twice, paying her dirty operation a total of $63,000. One of those payments broke the law, according to officials. Candidates like Harris may legally pay Waters' campaign, but outside groups and political parties cannot, and they have, at least twice. A committee in California's Democrat Party paid $35,000 for Harris, and a group funded by Michael Bloomberg wrote Maxine Waters a check for $25,000 to support former L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Maxine Waters' entire campaign scheme seems sketchy, unethical, and possibly illegal. That's especially ironic from someone who prides herself on saying President Trump should face impeachment. The president should demand an investigation of Maxine Waters' pay-to-play shakedown, which has made her family incredibly wealthy. See which laws this nasty woman has broken, and throw the book at them all. Maxine Waters has a face that should avoid television, but she seems determined to hog the spotlight and demonstrate her own unethical behavior. And that takes us deeper into the Democrat den of thieves and liars, where we now encounter the deep state agent, serial leaker, and traitor to the Republic, Adam Schiff. How does a lifelong loser get appointed to the most powerful House chairmanship except by purposeful and cynical design? Shifty Schiff is nothing but a political hitman who'll do anything his hidden masters tell him to do, because they have a lot of dirt on him. No congressman would ever expose themselves as much as Schiff has unless they have been bribed or blackmailed. And oft times it's a combination of pedogate blackmail and irresistible bribery that keeps them doing their dirty deeds, according to a former Intel analyst. There is perhaps no other member of Congress who is so dangerous to the American Republic, operating in his current leadership capacity within the Democrat House leadership. That he got appointed in the first place, particularly in view of his illegal leaking and naked hypocrisy, reflects the profoundly evil powers that truly control him. Schiff has repeatedly proven himself determined to overthrow the man Americans elected in 2016 by any means possible. The meteoric rise of Adam Schiff in the American political firma provides an excellent study in the deep state's extraordinary control and flawless manipulation of those who are inordinately ambitious. In Adam Schiff, the power elite found the ideal agent provocateur. First and foremost, Adam Schiff was selected to lead the congressional charge to take down President Trump. He used his influential intel seat to bring gravitas to a fake news story of Russian collusion, which would greatly serve to distract a politically inexperienced president, as it would prevent Trump from fulfilling his campaign promises. There is no question that Hillary Clinton, John Podesta, and the rest of the DNC needed a very good excuse for the historic loss they suffered to Donald Trump. That they would find such a zealous, unprincipled advocate who would ardently promote such a flaky excuse in the person of Adam Schiff, exceeded all of the left's expectations. But why would such a politically ambitious congressman risk his future with an obviously empty case, as well as one full of holes? Perhaps the face of the unparalleled Democrat witch hunts against the Trump administration was a no-brainer for an up-and-comer angling for a Senate seat. However, it is the most misleading statements, outright lies, and deceptive falsehoods that Schiff is responsible for, both directly and indirectly, that show him to be an unscrupulous zealot. Because of the stature that Schiff has attained inside the Washington Beltway, particularly in the eyes of untrustworthy mainstream media, he has become an exceedingly dangerous politician. The press loves him because he is so brazen that he'll call recesses in committee meetings to rush outside and leak inside information to the press. Unscrupulous politicians like Adam Schiff thrive in California's communist sanctuaries. They took over Hollywood first. Schiff's 28th congressional district includes Hollywood, Hollywood Hills, West Hollywood, Burbank, Pasadena, and the rest of this liberal paradise. Adam Schiff's background is darker than a full moon eclipse. He has been charged with abuse by a black male who claims to have been Schiff's sex slave. While Pete Buttigieg has been openly frank about his different lifestyle, Schiff puts up a false facade. Still, this is the man that Democrats chose to lead the charge against Donald Trump. Adam Schiff has much in his past to be blackmailed with, and somebody has done a number on him. And finally, today we turn to Gerald Nadler, another socialist in Congress. That may come as a surprise. Many people who voted for him didn't know. Let us hope that it's true so we can rid ourselves of these socialists within our Congress and Senate and replace them with people who will follow the Constitution rather than the ideology of the socialists they work for. It was way back in the 1940s when the Socialist Party realized that the Democrat Party had begun to follow the same ideology as the Socialist Party. What's that got to do with what's going on today? For that answer, let's expose the man named Gerald Nadler, the man who's working on impeaching President Donald Trump. Just a quick look into Nadler's background finds a very deep association and links to the Socialist Party and links to the Communist Party. Go back and read just what the Socialist and Communist parties represent, and you will quickly see that they both hate the United States Constitution and they both hate freedom. Both of these very far-left parties work toward destroying our nation from within by placing puppets like Nadler and others in office to slowly work their ideology into the American dream. In 1992, longtime Democrat Congressman Ted Weiss died one day before his party's primary election for New York's newly redrawn 8th District. Jerry Nadler was selected, and he won easily because of the district he ran in. Upon his election to the House of Representatives, Jerry Nadler promptly joined the Congressional Progressive Caucus and became a leader of the Congressional Pro-Choice Caucus. That was not a good group to be in for a patriotic American, but Nadler was very quick to join, showing that his socialistic ideology was set before his election. The Congressional Progressive Party is just a cover name for the Socialist Party. The Congressional Progressive Caucus, or CPC, was founded in 1991 by Bernie Sanders, a self-identified socialist who had been recently elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. Along with Sanders, a co-founder was Maxine Waters. Another key player in establishing CPC was the Democrat Socialists of America, or DSA, which has maintained a close alliance with the caucus ever since. In 1997, DSA's political director, Chris Ridbaugh, organized a meeting with CPC leaders to discuss how the two groups might be able to unite forces on a common agenda. Among those who participated in that meeting were Bernie Sanders, labor leader Richard Trumka, Professor Noam Chomsky, feminist Patricia Ireland, Jesse Jackson, and others. The first thing that should jump out at us is that this group was started by none other than Bernie Sanders, a very committed socialist. Getting back to Jerry Nadler's association with this group, we see that it is closely associated with the Democratic Socialists of America, just another socialist branch of the Democrat Party. Through his years in politics, Nadler has maintained close ties to socialist organizations. In 1977, for instance, Nadler was a member of the Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee. And by 1983, he had joined the Democratic Socialists of America. Each year from 1995 to 97, Nadler spoke at the Democratic Socialists of America's Socialist Scholars Conferences. Nadler remains a DSA member to this very day. Just what you've heard today should be enough for a rational person to know that Jerry Nadler is not good for our freedom. After all, socialism doesn't promote freedom. I'll guarantee that you haven't heard this about Nadler from the fake news mainstream media. I'll close with a final show of what Nadler will do to keep his office. During a June 2014 House briefing with Obama administration officials on the trade of five high-ranking Taliban commanders in exchange for American Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, Nadler suggested that the Taliban, as non-state actors, had a status comparable to that of American soldiers who fought the British during the Revolutionary War. He quickly changed his tone when people heard it and questioned his traitorous words. Jerry Nadler is not just some harmless, rotund fuzzball. He is a solid socialist, and the only reason you have not heard more about this treacherous Democrat is because the mainstream media chooses to cover for him. The only thing worse than the far-left Socialist Democrat Party is the dishonest, left-wing biased media that has lost the trust of the American people, and rightly so. These are four of the Democrat elites who led the witch hunts against a duly elected president. It is time to see them for what they are: partisan hacks who would take this country to socialism if we give them the chance, and we must not give them the chance. I thank you for your time today. I'll be back again next weekend, God willing. Same time, same station.